This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Credit Suisse will pay $475 million to U.S. and European regulators to resolve charges in a so-called tuna bond scandal. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Corruption and cover-up rocked the southern African country of Mozambique, pushing millions of people into poverty and leading to Credit Suisse's settlement this week. Between 2012 and 2016, the bank arranged loans for the Mozambique government. They were aimed at financing a national tuna fishing project and maritime security fleet to protect it. But much of the lending was done without knowledge or approval from the country's parliament, and auditors reportedly discovered millions of dollars of the money that went missing. So what started as a plan for economic revitalization for Mozambique ended in tragedy for many, as the BBC's Matthew Davis explains.
Credit Suisse has admitted to the US and UK authorities about these bribery allegations. Now, it'll pay a fine to resolve these, and they all relate to what was the infamous $2 billion tuna scandal. Credit Suisse helped arrange $1 billion in bonds and more in syndicated loans to finance a tuna fishing industry in Mozambique. The idea was to build boats, build military patrol boats, and this sort of thing. But when that didn't happen, the IMF and other donors said, hang on, where's our money? And when it came out that a lot of the money had actually disappeared in bribes, the IMF pulled its support, the Mozambican currency then collapsed and defaulted on its US debt.
Now, the irony of this whole story, Matt, is that the plan was to build this tuna fishing fleet and, as you say, create jobs, sort of help boost the economy. Ultimately, though, the scandal has taken a huge financial toll on the people of Mozambique.
Well, it has, yes. I mean, after the currency collapse and the default, more people were pushed into poverty. 60% of people in Mozambique, that's around about 19 million people, live in extreme poverty. And we're talking here that they earn less than a dollar a day. So in this particular fallout from the tuna bond scandal, you've just made things worse.
Reputationally for Mozambique, you know, you mentioned the IMF and the World Bank questioned where their money went. Is it able to secure loans like it once was? How has the economy fared in the years since?
Well, the economy has obviously struggled in the fallout from defaulting on a loan. It's more difficult now for Mozambique to get loans. It's not impossible, and donors are coming back. But it hasn't really alleviated the position of ordinary people. More and more people are slipping into poverty in Mozambique.
The BBC's Matthew Davis for us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, global stocks are a little changed this morning. The FTSE 100 here in London is drifting lower. Worries have flared in recent days that the Bank of England could raise interest rates as early as its November meeting to tackle rising inflation. Data today, though, showed consumer prices unexpectedly dipped in the year to September to 3.1%. That's from 3.2% in August. A new report today from the UN Environment Program says government plans to continue extracting fossil fuels until 2030 are incompatible with keeping global temperatures in check. The BBC's Matt McGraw has that story.
This report says the major coal, oil and gas producers, including the US, UK, Saudi Arabia, Russia and Australia, expect to extract around 110% more fossil fuel by 2030 than would be compatible with the 1.5 Celsius rise in temperatures. Coal production is likely to drop, but gas will increase the most in the coming years. In 11 days' time, the UK will host the COP26 climate conference in Glasgow. This report illustrates just how far countries will have to move if the key goal of keeping 1.5 alive is to be realised.
That's the BBC's Matt McGraw reporting there.
Well, I don't know about you, but 2 years of a pandemic has, for better or for worse, changed my work wardrobe. With no guests and few coworkers in the office, I've been opting for flats over heels and nice jeans instead of pencil skirts. The BBC's Dan Asher has been taking a look at the changing face of fashion and confirms, indeed, I am not alone in this trend.
The bars and cafes on the cobbled streets of Redhall Market, here in the heart of the city of London, used to be full of suits and long dresses. But now, there is barely a tie or pair of heels in sight.
Hi, my name is Ivan Yankov. I'm a reinsurance underwriter.
What would you normally have worn to work before the pandemic?
Suit, white shirt, tie.
I wonder if you can just describe what you're wearing now.
I'm with chinos and with a polo t-shirt. Much more comfortable and easy to come to work.
I'm Eliana and I develop it. It's definitely more relaxed. Sometimes I wear jeans now. Very happy about it. It's definitely more comfortable.
And this new trend has had an impact on fashion retailers in the city. Neil McCann runs a tailor, McCann Bespoke, on Lime Street.
Compared to 2018, there's definitely been a shift to a more casual dress down, specifically on a Monday and a Friday. People that are coming into town on a Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday are still dressing up.
So the suit may not be dead, but how men wear it has changed. Ian Ewing is head of fashion design at John Lewis.
We've seen a new way of dressing for the office. It's people wearing those tailored separates in a different way. So, for instance, wearing a smart pair of trousers with a polo shirt.
So what should we be wearing? Jill Stanton is in charge of women's wear at M&S.
We've all spent the last 18 months or so in our sweatpants. We have just had a demand for colour. I think when you're at home on a Zoom, you're less likely to be wearing the ubiquitous black and navy of the office.
So, as people return to their offices, more colourful clothing may be here to stay. I'm the BBC's Dan Asher for Marketplace.
Any fashion changes you'll stick to? Tweet me at Victoria Craig. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.